Good morning, everybody. First of all, it's a great pleasure to be here to help in participate in the celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Computer Science Department at Rutgers. Over the years, I have funded a number of people through programs that I had at NSF and now at AFOSR. And it's a pleasure, Barbara Ryder, Professor Metaxas, Manish Parasar, and several other people. And always it's great. My PIs kind of laugh when I say I consider my PIs like my children, or at least my godchildren. I'm very happy always to see them, first of all, being very successful and impactful in their research, and also advancing professionally. So it's a pleasure to see a number of them here today again, and as I said, participate in the events of today. Jim Corral's talk gave a lot of nice introductory segues to the things that I had planned to discuss. So I'm going to refer to items in his presentation rather than elaborating more in mine. So what I would like to speak is about where we are in computer science, actually also where we have been, because history sometimes is a big indicator of where we can go, but primarily where we are and where we are going. And Jim, I don't have his tire track diagram, but I do, in a sense, summarized it in these two first lines, that the research in in every field and in computer science has drivers. The drivers can be practical challenges and in need of solution, but also curiosity. They set the directions, and also the advances become themselves eventually create new drivers, new directions and advances. And there is a symbiotic relay and a feedback loop across drivers, directions, advances. And so in my talk, I thought I can present some of these, both from perspectives of an agency, the Air Force Office of Scientific Research and the Air Force more broadly, and the Department of Defense. And also give you some perspectives from science and technology directions. When I came to AFOSR, I kind of coined that sentence that the work that we want to fund is excellence in science and transformative impact to the Air Force. The research we fund is fundamental research. When Jim said NSF is funding 82%, for example, of the computer sciences basic research, the rest of it is funded primarily by AFOSR and in some other parts of the Department of Defense. So this is a sort of our also a mission to both drive our science from the impact to the Air Force, but as I always like to say, anything we do has also impact in the civilian sector, and this also both gives us opportunities for collaborations with other agencies and leverage the work that is done in other agencies. So I will give a little overview of AFOSR. We are part of the Air Force Research Laboratories. There are eight laboratories where researchers there do more applied and development work. AFOSR collaborates with these laboratories as well as the academic community through the research we fund in the academia. The AFOSR, the main location, is in Arlington, Virginia, but we have offices in Europe, in Asia, and in South America. As we like to say, the sun never sets over AFOSR, But most importantly is that we do fund research, academic research and industry research, both in the US but also overseas. And that's a nice, in a sense, alternate opportunity. And we collaborate, of course, with NSF, which has international program, but their funding model for international activities is slightly different, so they're very complementary. Because as we know, science, technology development is international today, more than any other time. We also, together with the broader initiatives, sort of from OSTP that Jim mentioned, we also have, which we participate, we also have sort of strategic guidance from DOD, specific studies. A number of them are listed here. Primarily, these are the Air Force studies. The Air Force has every 10 years, roughly every 10 years, a 10-year outlook study. And the Air Force Technology Horizons is the study that came out in 2010. Actually, I will talk a little bit more about it. And since then, a number of other studies, the Energy Horizons, Cyber Defense, and so on, have come in, which in some ways have built upon some of the Technology Horizons ideas. So together with the Air Force strategic directions, we also, in a sense, map those to OSD, the Office of the Secretary of Defense strategic priorities. As you can see, the S&T areas, many of them are computer science related. And also even the priority research areas, as it was discussed by Jim also, computer science is ubiquitous. Actually, my undergraduate is mathematics and physics. And for several years now, I've been saying mathematics is actually the basis of all sciences, even social sciences, logic, Socrates, Aristotle, the logic deduction, which is the key in mathematics, is in every other field. Physics also is a fundamental for many other sciences. You cannot do chemistry, you cannot do biology, you cannot do engineering without physical principles. But for several years, I've been saying that computer sciences has become equal as a triad, together with mathematics and physics, as the basis for all sciences. And in fact, I've been saying you cannot do mathematics today without computer science. So yes, computer science is very kind of ubiquitous. And it is reflected in both in the Air Force directions and the OSD directions. The Air Force Research Laboratories have a number of strategic directions, and the first one, autonomous systems, is primarily computer science based, but also the other four here include computer sciences, computational sciences as a key enabler. So in terms of the way we support research at AFOSR, we have what we call extramural programs. That these are programs that fund the academic community as well as industry through research grants. We also have a number of programs to support young investigators, STEM education programs, and so on. And also we have transition programs for transitioning basic research and applied research to the industrial sector along the many examples that Jim gave. And in addition, we have what we call intramural programs, which are geared to fund work, basic research work in the Air Force Research Laboratories. And we do that in multiple ways, primarily through direct funding, through bridging the labs researchers with academia, and certainly fostering and supporting international research opportunities. In addition to the Air Force broader studies, we also, FOSR also has a number of documents. One of them was, we had our 60th anniversary a couple of years ago, and also every year or two we submit, we produce a technical strategic plan, and a lot of the research directions are articulated in a yearly broad agency announcement that has a number of programs and research directions that we support. And the emphasis may change, if not on a yearly basis, every few years. So I gave you a little bit of an overview of where, from the agency's kind of procedural funding of research in general and also computer sciences. So I want now to switch and provide some of the perspectives of directions in computer sciences from the science and technology. So when I came to FOSR in March of 2010, I kind of articulated five strategic kind of directions for the directorate and AFOSR, and they are listed here. One of them is the dynamic driven application systems, which I'm going to talk a little bit more. The other is was on multi-core systems, and the idea there was that multi-cores now populate and enable not only the high-end, but also ubiquitous sensing. And I will discuss more about it, the importance of this kind of seamless now a scope of platforms based on multi-cores from the high-end to the real-time, mobiles, wearables, and so on. Systems engineering, for more systematic methods for building and managing the computing systems themselves and their environments, was also another important direction. And all these now have been born through initiatives in DOE and other agencies. Understanding the brain and the mind, we have had also an OSTP-supported initiative. And certainly an idea that was very timely at that time was network science. And I think the emphasis has not been in the forefront as much, but certainly directions that were set through these initiatives have impacted a number of areas. As Jim also said, partnerships with between academia and industry are very important. I had, when I was at NSF, I wrote a few reports, and actually Manish Parashar, who came to NSF as a program director, some of these ideas were implemented in the institutes that Manish, sort of a program that he created. And certainly collaborations across the multiple sectors and industry and academia and international are very important for enabling transformative innovations. And of course all these, I propose them as kind of new directions in computer science. And another item that I emphasize is related to some of the things that Jim said, is that research today, technology advances, science advances are not happening through advances in stovepiped in areas, but also, but they are through collaborative efforts, multidisciplinary research across disciplines. And of course, we certainly want to support fundamental advances and know-how within a given discipline, but we need to, in a sense, emphasize more, and we have now emphasized more the multidisciplinary aspects of technology and science advances, what I call then the T model, not the model T, the T model, that you have excellence and advances within fields, but also leveraging across disciplines. And for a number of years, I advocated to the computer science community the benefits of bridging and understanding other disciplines. And in fact, I had suggested as part of the curriculum that for undergrad, from the undergraduate level and on, for a computer science degree, for the students to be exposed into some other discipline, whether it's applied math, whether it is statistics, whether it is engineering, physics, chemistry. And I think today we are, in a sense, more able to do that through multidisciplinary efforts. And Professor Metaxas gave a number of examples of centers here at Rutgers and individual research projects that emphasize multidisciplinary research and expose the students into other fields than simply one discipline, in this case only computer science. In fact, as we were talking earlier on, I thought that when I was getting my PhD, and I will date myself, it was in 1976. As part of, in addition to your thesis defense, you had to demonstrate proficiency in two languages. So I'm from Greece, and I do speak four languages. I speak French quite well, and Greek, which didn't count, or Italian, which didn't count. So I was, in a sense, asked to kind of study German for a few months. And at that time, I was not actually thinking that I would be very productive. And I said, well, you know what? To do physics today, you need to have knowledge in a computer language. At that time, and I date again myself, it was Fortran. C had not, Java had not been invented. So I argued that the second language should be the computer language. And after many discussions, the faculty accepted it. And in fact, they told me that after that, the students were, in a sense, examined in one foreign language and in a computer language, which at that time was Fortran, for, you know, at least in the physics department. So yes, computer science for some time now has demonstrated its value and its importance and ubiquitousness in any other field, and more so today. So in terms of these academic industry partnerships, these are important both for research projects, in education, in technology development. So I did discuss earlier on about several reports that the Air Force has produced over the last 10 years, and the more seminal one has been the Technology Horizons report. And the reports that followed it, in a sense, endorse a number of recommendations that were made in that report. Actually, this report is pretty visionary, and it's a 10, actually, plus 10 years, so it's a 20-year outlook. And I articulated a number of areas that, although in the report they are driven by the needs and new capabilities for the Air Force, I highly recommend reading it because you'll find that there are many counterparts to the civilian sector in any one of these areas. And I have highlighted some of them here. Autonomy was a big one, fault tolerance, survivability are important capabilities that are necessary not only for the defense sector, but in many civilian environments. So the other aspect is that as, in a sense, we look into new capabilities, to creating new capabilities, the systems that we deal today are more complex. Understanding a component of a system, understanding how to design a system, is not sufficient. Not only we have systems that need to interoperate with other systems, but they interoperate in many complex ways that are not able to, we're not able to predict a priori during the design cycle. And for many years, modeling of systems had been a very powerful tool of designing systems. However, over the years, as the complexity of systems increased and their operational cycle became more complex and unpredictable, I have articulated the need of having more systematic methods for the operational cycle, and certainly modeling, which had proved powerful for the design cycle, was a good candidate. But also, we couldn't use the modeling methods that we had for predicting static characteristics, for example. And so a new kind of modeling methods were needed. So, and I thought of this idea actually when I was doing myself large radiation transport, discrete ordinates, numerical methods, and statistical methods, Monte Carlo, for large radiation transport environments. And so the idea of having a model that can interact with the instrumentation systems and enhance the model, one of the drivers at that time was speeding up the models, because with the computing capabilities in the early 80s, these models were taking days. So if you want to use them in an operational cycle, you had to speed them up. And the original idea I had was to replace parts of the computation in the model with the actual data, either that you had collected previously or you were collecting online. And in reverse, have the model control the instrumentation so you can collect data in useful parts of the measurement space that were useful in return to improve your model, to improve the operational cycle of the system. At that time, the idea was premature, but over the time has become more and more timely, because we do, not only we deal with very complex systems, but also we have improved the computational capabilities, the communication capabilities. So this idea, which I will define in a minute, dynamic data-driven application system, went beyond the traditional modeling, beyond the instrumentation. And we have demonstrated today that we can create more accurate models that can, in a sense, be used for managing optimally the operation of complex environments. And one of the aspects is that we want to have decision support systems, and typically decision support systems are very simple, sometimes tables, if this happened to that, or if something else happened, to the other. And here we want to have the ability of having more comprehensive modeling behind the decisions that we made, and we have demonstrated that we can create decision support systems incorporating the accuracy of full-scale models, and that's a very important capability for the Air Force, but also in the civilian sector. And we do have collaborations with NSF in programs in that area. So, as I mentioned before, our strategy in our programs overall and in the program that supports this DDIS idea is to support excellence in basic research sciences and also impact to the Air Force. So, so here is the kind of my classical style slide on DDIS. On the left-hand top side, are the three modalities that we have representing the systems. We have a theoretical concept about the system. We, in a sense, have a mathematical or statistical or other non-numerical representations. And we also have measurements on the system, experimental measurements or on the system. And we typically use these approaches, this triad, in more loosely coupled and unidirectional ways. You perform a simulation modeling, you compare it with the experimental measurements, you may change your model, you may change your theoretical concept, and you repeat the process. With DDIS, we want to enable the capability where your model can change during execution time based on additional data about the system. And in reverse, the model can control the instrumentation and collect data in smart ways about the system to help you enhance your understanding of the system, enhance the operational cycle of the system. So the idea, and as I said, I thought of it in 1980 when it was quite premature, it's compelling, but also it's very challenging. And the first thing I thought at that time was, what happens to the stability of the algorithm? And that applies not only to the numerical algorithm, but also to stochastic algorithms, because in Monte Carlo, if you destroy the Markovian process, your convergence properties also there, and nice properties of the Monte Carlo go out of the window. So that was sort of my thought then, but also practically, it was not as possible to, in a sense, try to develop these kind of methods because we didn't have an opportunity of interacting with a computation. We ran in what was called then batch mode. You submitted your program and 3 days later you came and got back the results, or in smaller computations in a few hours. So the idea of needing both more models that are stable under perturbations and algorithms was very important. In these environments, a model can invoke other models, other regions of physics of the problem, or other modalities of the system. And also, the interface to the measurement, it's also a challenge, and it was a challenge, and certainly in need for new methods of being able to enable such capabilities. And moreover, in these environments, unlike the traditional computational environments where you have a model and you have the input parameters and you know the complexity of the algorithms involved, you know how long it will take to compute, communicate, memory requirements, I/O requirements. In these cases, the requirements of the model change. So you needed to have capabilities where you can dynamically and adaptively remap the model into whatever computational resources were needed if you, for example, wanted to get the results in a given time. So that was also another challenge. And overall, one can say that this is a model that where the unifies the traditional distinct computational and measurement instrumentation cycles of a system into a continuum, because your application platform now becomes both the mid-range or large-range platforms where the large models or mid-range model executes, all the way to the instrumentation platforms. And today that we have, instrumentation involves multitudes of sensors all the way to the sensors side, so to the real time. So that was sort of, again, another challenge in terms of the computational environments, the runtime environments, of supporting these applications. And so I, from the very beginning, I in a sense said, these capabilities are not going to be developed by the computer scientists sitting in one corner, the applications modelers of different areas in the second corner, the algorithms people in the third corner, and the measurement people in the fourth corner. You need synergistic multidisciplinary research. And so a number of reports have come since I launched these ideas in the late 1998, 99, 2000 at NSF, and said these are revolutionary and timely, started becoming timely and ever more timely now. In addition to the term dynamic data-driven application systems that some people consider a bit too mathematical, I have introduced the term infosybiotics, but DDS has become part of the vernacular. And one example that I want to, in a sense, I always show that is indicative of the power of DDAS is a project that actually Jim Kouros also had been involved. This is on adverse weather prediction, where we have a large number of multiple instrumentation methodologies and infrastructure, and also models. So in the picture is shown the large NEXRADs that monitor the, because of the curvature of the Earth, the mesoscale, but also because for tornadoes, for example, tornadic activity, what happens near the ground is very important. So Jim actually was involved in the CASA network, which was phased ray measurements, and one can envision, I call them, they're like a meter high, and you can call them R2D2s, but you can have a large numbers of them. And because phased radar arrays can be used for monitoring other fast entities moving in the atmosphere, like radio contaminant, one can envision that one can have a ubiquitous instrumentation, not only where, in areas where tornadic activity happens, but also in many other areas. And now you can see the complexity, because when you have so many sensors that you don't want to collect data all the time, because you're limited from the volumes of the data, storing all this data, and in cases where they are transmitted wirelessly from the bandwidths, you want to be able to do this in smart ways. And moreover, in tornadic activity, you don't have only the radar data, you have also temperature, humidity, wind velocity, and so on. So the idea of collecting data ubiquitously, again, becomes a challenge. And Kelvin Drogemeyer came to the workshop, and we had a report from a March 2000 workshop. And Kelvin went and did some post kind of mortem simulations of some tornadic activity that they had missed. So the slide here shows how the DIS can be applied for tornadic activity. So where you can collect, you can stream data into the models, steer the models, and the models now go back and, in a sense, look at data from sensors and correlate data from sensors as is needed by the models in a dynamic way. And on the right-hand side also, it's depicted how the computations need to be remapped so you can get the results in half an hour, for example, or less, so you can predict the tornado before it hits the area. So in using DDAS, they post-mortem recomputed data from a tornado in Dallas, Texas that had happened around the time we had the workshop. And he called me, or he emailed me actually, saying that he had become enamored with this idea because they did try it and it worked. It predicted this hook of the tornado that the simulations had missed without the DDAS method. And I think this is a very nice example showing how you can use DDAS to, first of all, improve your predictive capabilities, but also coordinate multiple instruments in smart ways. And in this example, it's shown the kind of software architecture that is needed for these environments, and certainly for the computer scientists, this is the mother lode of opportunities and challenges. I always say challenges are, should be seen always as opportunities, because typically that is the case. And this is an example of a dynamic workflow, for example, because in DDAS environments, you want to invoke other models, other algorithms dynamically as based on the dynamic data inputs. And another aspect of this work is depicts here the integration all the way from the high end to the real time. Because many times, so in DDAS environments, what computes at the high end and the real time may change, because you may not be able to transmit your data, all the data into the main storage or main platform, and you want to ship part of your model and do some of the data analysis and part of the computation in the sensor side. So this is sort of the idea for you in DDAS environment. You have to integrate and you have to support the runtime that seamlessly integrates the high end with the real time. And these are tremendous challenges for computer sciences. We have started actually chipping at this block, as I like to say, because many years ago, I supported the work on LLVM, Vikram Advay at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, where I said that we want support, and at that time, it was targeted towards the high-end programming, parallel programming environment for the high-end. And but at that time, I told Vikram, you know, we want to make this work in real time. And in fact, now LLVM, and he did that over the years, and LLVM is the workhorse for the development of the software for mobile devices like the iPhone. And so here is a summary of the capabilities through DDAS, where we have the ability of creating more accurate models, creating more smarter ways of complex instrumentation, and where also we can enable real-time decision support with the accuracy of Fusquet models, and I will give you some examples. Some people said DDA, computational science is the third paradigm, theory and experiment being the first or second second paradigms. Jim Gray came and said data is the fourth paradigm. I have, with all due respect to Jim Gray, I believe data is the primordial paradigm. But anyway, I wouldn't call DDAS the fifth paradigm. I call it the unifying paradigm. So here are some of the challenges that I articulated on the top of the slide in modeling, in algorithms. For example, when we launched this DDAS, the workshop, and started launching the ideas of DDAS in the ITR program, I told the community that we need, for example, fast uncertainty quantification methods. The methods until that time were Monte Carlo, and I funded the first work on faster methods, the generalized polynomial chaos work of Karnatakis and Chu, under this rubric of DDAS, driven by the need for faster methods. And also in terms of the system software, through a program also that I had started previously, the Next Generation Software Program, I started funding ideas for dynamic runtime support environments, embedding the compiler into the runtime to, in a sense, optimize and remap an application and optimize it in different platforms depending on different underlying resources, computational resources, communication, and so on. And these ideas have become ever more timely today, not only because we talk about big data. So big data started the notions a few years ago when there were data from petascale computing, for example, and large instruments. However, as I said then, sensors, heterogeneous ubiquitous sensors, are creating a second wave of big data. And there, the challenges are much more, much higher than just addressing large volumes of data from high-end computing and large instruments where you have control on the data formats you collect, the time scales, and so on. In ubiquitous sensing, heterogeneous sensing, you have sensors that operate in different time scales, different data formats, different volumes. And so this variability and dynamicity creates even more challenging environments. And in DDAS, these environments are spanning the scale from the traditional big data to this second wave of big data in what I call the large-scale big data. And likewise, as I mentioned earlier on, the platforms that we use today, they range from the high end to the real time. So really, the environments that we deal with are large-scale big computing. And the other aspect is that the traditional methods of pushing the high end through customized processing, although they have already changed for a number of years now, parallel computing, for example, started by the objective of developing specialized processors that they would be put together to create the higher computational powers. But these high-end systems for the last 30, 35 years now, they've been created by putting together the COTS, later on the GPUs, today the multicores. And the idea of who drives this technology for multicores today and in the future, it will be more the sensors, the need for more efficient sensors, sensors that also are low power, as much fault tolerant as and low power as the high-end platforms need. And these create both opportunities but also drivers for new computer sciences research at the system level. So let me, so how much time do you have? 3 minutes? Okay. So let me skip, I was going to talk about the portfolio of the program that fosters multidisciplinary research. and where we, in a sense, have supported and demonstrated the opportunities for this kind of new methods in many areas. We, in a sense, select the areas that we fund based on the needs of new capabilities in the Air Force, but there are more opportunities than are covered by the areas that I have here. They range from the materials modeling, structural health monitoring, environmental, and, for example, surveillance through coordination among multiple sensors is very important for national security and national defense applications, but also have applications in environmental sciences, in agriculture, and many of the civilian sectors, smart cities, smart transportation systems. Space weather is very important. Accuracy of the GPS, depending on understanding space weather, and we have demonstrated methods of understanding more space weather conditions and how they affect GPS accuracy. And also we have supported work on cybersecurity. So we can address many of these during the panel if there are questions. This is a slide where the impact of DDAS is shown in areas beyond those of the Department of Defense. We have multi-agency efforts. There are many projects that have been funded, and you can find the work presentation, slides, papers on this work on the onedas.org website. This is showing the impact both the Air Force and the civilian sector. Let me skip a number of slides and go to the end. I don't know if I can. So let me skip and say a couple of words. This is several projects that we fund that allow us to assess damage in a flying aircraft, for example, and how the damage can propagate, and also how you can apply actuation to mitigate the damage. And when you do that, also, we can create a decision support system that allows to assess, for example, whether an aircraft can take a sharp maneuver or needs to take a gentle maneuver. And of course, this is for defense applications, but in the civilian sector, allows you to assess tolerance of an airplane flying in under turbulence and so on. We have also work that we fund on electrical power grids, because electrical power grids and microgrids, which is an important new direction in electrical power distribution, are very important for a military base. And we have demonstrated that we, using in a DDAS, in a dynamic data-driven application systems way, statistical models, agent-based model, multi-objective optimization methods, we can enable, for example, providing fault tolerance. So if a damage happens in a part of the power grid, and we do this for very complex environments with multiple energy sources, multiple consumers, each one of them having requirements of different levels of priorities, of how you can, for example, optimally satisfy the higher priorities and then satisfy the lesser priority needs to a smaller extent. And these have been used and demonstrated in actual operational environments. The PI is from University of Miami and works both with hospitals and in the area of Miami, and also the Eglin Military Air Force Base. So, and they have real data where they've demonstrated these capabilities. And another area where we have applied that is in cybersecurity, security of software, for example, as we know, is very, very important. Theoretical methods that have expansion factors of 10 to the 9 are not practically applicable. And in this case, the PIs have demonstrated that they can have very efficient methods of protecting software and with guaranteed proofs of protection, 100% protection in the security. So here are some of the summary of some of the new capabilities we have developed. I'll kind of skip it. An important one is decision support systems with the accuracy of full-scale models, which is important for the Department of Defense. And also we have joint initiatives with other agencies. We have a joint initiative with NSF. We have yearly PI meetings where they are open to the public. And last year, our PI meeting was hosted by IBM Research because they had interest in many of the research projects that are funded under the program as part of IBM's IoT initiative and also the Watson system. In summary, these are some new directions that I believe have create new opportunities for computer science. There is a key role that they play in the big data, big computing. There are many new capabilities that have been demonstrated and new opportunities that can be demonstrated, further demonstrated. And also the partnerships between academia, industry, and the government are very important, as well as the international component. And as I mentioned earlier on, the opportunities forum, the FOSR, are on the FOSR BAA websites. And here is my closing slides of some new opportunities for computer science through some of these ideas that I presented. And with that, thank you. And again, congratulations for the 50th anniversary and for many more years of success and increasing success of the department.
Since we're a little bit delayed, we have time for one question. One question. And please use ask for the microphone so everybody can hear.
Thank you. I've always been interested in so much of effort on sensing, computing with what we sense. And do you have any programs where we try to control things such as environment, weather, climate? Do you have?
Yeah. Well, we cannot control the weather, but we can, in a sense, develop methods that allow us to address events that can be harmful events or, you know, emergency response and so on, but not control the weather.
That would be an interesting research idea, research direction.
It's an interesting research idea, yes, perhaps, yes.
Okay, so if you have more questions during lunch, Dr. Diamond, afterwards,
the panel.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.